The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. Coming up on the show, I'll be talking with John Stevens of the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. They've announced their 55th anniversary summer season, which he'll be talking about. We'll also be talking about a one-night-only anniversary concert and gala coming up on Saturday, June 2nd. So we'll hear some highlights there. First on the show, though, it's a CD release conversation featuring the Alethea Duo, who are flutist Jonathan Keeble and harpist Ann Young, both of the University of Illinois School of Music faculty. And Jonathan will play for us a bit live as well, both Ann and Jonathan with us on the show. Hope that you will stay tuned. It's music by Lowell Lieberman, the second of the two movements which make up his sonata for flute and piano. And that one, the movement called Presto Energico, which simply means fast and energetic, and featured flutist Jonathan Keeble and pianist Rose Schleim Grace from their album called Icarus, with works by Lowell Lieberman, Prokofiev, Richard Pryor, different one than you probably are thinking of, and Thea Musgrave. At least I assume it's a different Richard Pryor than others might have in mind when they hear that name. And played that music by way of introduction to not only Jonathan Keeble, but also Ann Young. Together, they are the Alethea Duo, and I'm not even sure I'm saying that right, but they'll correct me if I'm not. They're with me live here on Live and Local. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Did I say that close to right?
It's pretty close. We call it Alethea.
Alethea.
Yes.
Well, I have a friend whose name is Alethea, and people are always calling her Althea or some other sorts of things. Alethea?
Yes.
What does it mean?
Well, that's a good question. It's a word that has many layers, and it means truth in one sense, but it also means that which is undisclosed and becomes disclosed. And so the reason we decided to go with this name as a duo is that, you know, in the world of absolute music, which is what we do, which is music that doesn't have words, we thought that, you know, that we don't have the benefit of lyrics to communicate exactly what composers want or what the musicians are conveying. And so we asked ourselves, how can we convey these layers of complexity and let people discover what they want to interpret from the music individually? And so the name kind of means that the performers can relay whatever they're feeling, and then the audiences can thereby interpret what they will, and the layers of truth that they find are their own. They're not necessarily ones that are spoken or conveyed literally.
It sounds very existential.
It is. Heidegger likes it.
Oh, geez, are we going to get into Heidegger, about whom I know nothing? I might have even studied something about him in college and have forgotten it all. Well, the title of the CD that we just played from was Icarus, which itself suggests extra musical things. The title of the CD that you two have just released, called Song of the Black Swan, suggests extra musical things. Is that a pattern with you, Jonathan, since the first CD was yours as well? Or what is it with extra musical if you're just playing music?
I think this is Anne's credit that should be taken here.
Oh, no. Well, actually, you know, both our first CD and this one, we often like to find some sort of theme that sort of connects the music with other realms, other communities. So this particular CD, The Song of the Black Swan, actually is works that are inspired by nature or somehow related to that, because that's something I think all of us have come from and hopefully can relate to.
The first CD, if I remember, is called Voyage.
Voyage, yes. And it was American works for flute and harp. So it was works by composers, primarily North American composers. Just sort of something that, you know, perhaps it will draw someone in who's interested in maybe American music or just music of the Americas. So hopefully the recordings that we're putting out, these are things that make people curious about both the music and also what's beyond the music. So,
well, I knew about this CD because I read an article, I guess it was emailed to me, I'm not sure where it came from exactly, but an article from written by Dusty Rhodes in which she addressed the that subtitle, you know, Music from Nature, and thought, oh, is this going to be sort of new agey kind of music, which you went on to say it is not. But did that, and Jonathan, you were a little afraid of that title,
well,
or something?
Yeah, I grew up in the country, and so it I'm keenly sensitive to this kind of a false connection between music and nature, and I really, it was important to me that the music be true to itself and to nature for that matter. And I, right when we were about to release the CD, I called Anne in kind of a panic and said, I can't do this. This is just going to wind up on FM 100, which was what I grew up with, which was easy listening.
Well, actually, you know, I used to be able to do a very good imitation of the stereotypical FM 100 announcer. Beautiful music, 24 hours a day. They don't exist anymore, do they?
I don't know.
So you might be able to relax a little bit on that count.
Yeah, but the music is, the music is. Certainly not easy listening music, but it's also, I think, genuinely very accessible, and while at the same time, hopefully being interesting.
And also it's a reminder in nature sometimes, also not to take it granted, there is a lot of complexity in nature, just something growing. So, you know, hopefully it's something that maybe at first sight seems obvious, but then on second sight, second listening, you know, continues to reveal itself, you know, such as peeling an onion or, you know, the symmetry in a nautilus. There's a lot of, I guess, analogies you could make to it. So,
well, and it's a CD you would like people to listen to more than once, and enjoy listening more than once, and get something more and more out of it each time they hear it, I presume.
We hope so. And I think part of it, too, is the CD actually is not just all flute and harp music. There's actually solo flute music, solo harp music. There's also the wonderful Claude Debussy sonate for flute, viola, and harp, with recorded with Masumi Rastad of the Pacifica Quartet. So it's rather sort of how we would like to approach, I believe, our concerts and performances and recordings, that it's not predictable, but yet it continues to reveal itself in different ways to audiences and listeners and to ourselves, too.
Well, let's hear a first example. This is from the opening piece on the new CD by the
Alethea.
See, now I've got all these different pronunciations in my head. Alethea Duo, Jonathan Keeble and Anne Young, flute and harp, respectively. This is music by Gareth Farr, who is a new name on me. Teheke is the name of the piece.
It's the Maori word for waterfalls. And so this second movement actually is a little waterfall on the land of the composer. The composer is actually from New Zealand, so it's on his family's land. It's a very, well, I guess we shouldn't tell you what it's going to be given our names, but it's an idyllic waterfall, apparently.
But it is also a specific waterfall.
Mm-hmm. For the composer.
For the composer. You get to experience it musically and vicariously here, music by Gareth Farr on Live and Local. Thank you. That was music by Gareth Farr, born 1968. The second movement from his piece called Teke. I can't read today. It's very small here. Teheke. For flute and harp from 2002. From the CD, the new CD called Song of the Black Swan, featuring the Alethea Duo, who are Jonathan Keeble flute and Ann Young harp, both professors at the University of Illinois. And I want to say you guys got here at a similar time.
Pretty close. Ann beat me by maybe 3 years. Did we? Yeah.
Last century. I stopped counting. Yeah. Definitely last century for me.
What, when and why did you form this duo? This is your second CD and now, and you've been doing lots of concerts together?
That's a funny question. You know, I got here and I was on a one-year appointment at the university, and I'd gone on leave from my prior job just to see how things would go here.
And I was part-time, too.
Ann was part-time, and she asked me to play on a recital, and it was this somewhat, I mean, it's not really that bizarre, but it's a little bizarre piece called Narthex by a harpist composer named Bernard Andres. And it requires the flutist to take their head joint out at a couple points and, you know, do some kind of goofy sounds that sound similar to something similar to slide whistle. And all I was thinking about was getting the job here. And all Ann was thinking about is I got to get this head joint off and make the right noise. And it was
I took it as a sign of your character that you were willing to take your head up joint off and play with the part-time harp.
Okay, now for the average listener, we need to clarify. When you say take your head joint off, this is not a part of your personal anatomy.
Indeed.
This is a part of your flute.
Yes. Would you like to hear the sound?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it sounds something like this. There are a couple sounds I have to make on the piece. One is, which is nothing like what a flute sounds like ordinarily. And the other one is,
it's like a slide whistle.
So the head joint is essentially the top of the flute. It's the part where that it contains the part you blow into.
Right.
And you can take it off. You tune the instrument by moving that part in and out to make it higher or lower.
Right.
And you took it off. And actually, for that latter bit, you just put your finger in and out of it to change the pitch.
Right. And it's probably where the soul of the instrument resides, too, if an instrument has a soul. So
now, why do you say that? We're back to existentialism again.
Every instrument obviously has its resonating point. And with the flute, the resonance goes up and down the instrument, but it's really where the air of the flutist hits the mouthpiece that dictates it. And so in this case, the color of the instrument is so much dictated by that point where the air goes in. That's why we call it the soul of the instrument's residence.
Well, since we are talking about the flute at the moment, I know you brought something to play solo for us, as Ann said a bit ago, on your recitals and on your CDs. There is music for solo flute, for solo harp, for the two of you, obviously, since you are a duo, and then sometimes adding another person or two to the performance. And so you're going to do something from this CD?
Yeah, it's called the Fantasia Andina, and it's a piece that I heard first about probably 15 years ago when I was in Ecuador, and there was a flute festival going on there. And you know how flute festivals go.
Most
people don't, do they? Well, those of us that are acquainted with flute festivals usually get some serious flute fatigue by about day 4 or 5, and this happened to be a week-long one. And it was around day 6 that I heard this piece, and I was sitting in the audience, and I was ready for another flute recital, mostly, but really was thinking about going to bed, too. And this fellow walked out that I'd never heard before, and his name was Cesar Vivanco, and the crowd just went wild. And he started playing, and
it went wild for him when he walked out?
Yeah, when he walked out.
Because he was somebody?
Yeah, he was somebody in the sense that he's from Peru, and he was famous for the piece I'm about to play for you. And it's based on the theme El Cóndor Pasa, which was popularized by Simon and Garfunkel many, many years ago. And he created this fantasy, or this set of variations, essentially, around the El Cóndor Pasa tune. And in it, you can hear the sound, the wind blowing through the Andes. You can almost imagine condors flying up above, and you can hear guitars in the distance, hopefully, and all other types of extra musical natural effects. And it was really quite a moving performance, I have to say. And so I managed to get a copy of it. And this is my Midwestern guy's rendition of that.
So all of these things evoked by one flute player.
Yes.
That's the idea.
Would you like to hear it?
I'm eager for the experience. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be an experience. Jonathan Keeble, music by Cesar Vivanco, Fantasia Andina, for flute from his new CD with harpist Ann Young, Song of the Black Swan. Yes, much applause going in on our tiny studio with all three of us here. That was beautiful. Music by Cesar Fivanco's Fantasia Andina, for solo flute, obviously. Jonathan Keeble, the flutist. And that music is one of 15 pieces that can be heard. I'm sorry, not 15 tracks. It's about 12 pieces that can be heard on his CD with harpist Ann Young. Together they are the Aletheia Duo on their CD called Song of the Black Swan, music inspired by nature. For those instruments, either solo or in combination, or in the case of music that we're going to hear in just a moment, that also adds a viola, probably one of the best, probably the best known piece on this particular CD. I notice here there's, if I'm counting, two premieres, including a piece that I assume must have been written for you all by a fellow faculty member at the University of Illinois.
Yes, it's Reynold Tharp. He's a composition and theory faculty in the School of Music, and he wrote us a beautiful piece called Chaparral. And it's actually in the memory of one of his teachers who's also a flutist and a composer, John Thau. So, and it's inspired, Reynold actually was born in Indiana, but grew up in Southern California. So this piece sort of refers to his memories of the chaparral, which is these dry, shrubs that grow in
shrubby
the rolling
shrubs.
Hills. Yes. So,
like tumbleweeds or something like that? Or they become tumbleweeds?
They do become tumbleweeds, but they're it's a very arid landscape in rolling hills, so he kind of evokes that in that piece that he wrote for us. And then the other one is by a classmate of Jonathan's back at Eastman, and that's Schaefer Mahoney, which is called Shining River.
And Schaefer's one of my best friends, and we were lucky to get him to transcribe this piece from flute and guitar to flute and harp for us, and I think it works really well with this combination, and he evokes the rivers that are described in John Muir's writings, and John Muir describes this tiny droplet that descends from a glacier and slowly becomes a creek which flows into a river, and then this mighty waterfall and river that eventually goes to the Gulf of Mexico, and that's essentially what this piece attempts to convey through musical means.
Well, the two pieces we've heard so far, the Gareth Farr piece with both of you, of course, and then the piece you just played for us for solo flute. And also, I know this piece we're going to be sampling. Yeah, it sounds like you really didn't need to be concerned that this would be easy listening music, but at the same time, it seems to me to be easily listened to music that's also really inspiring and evocative and can take you, I mean, it's already taking me places, even just your description of places that I think I'd like to go. And so if any of you are so inspired, since this CD is brand new, to explore it yourselves, I know you can find it on Amazon. I didn't notice if it was on iTunes yet or not.
It is
probably
on iTunes.
Is there.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of pieces by a teacher of yours.
Right. My teacher at Indiana, where I went to school, Suzanne McDonald and her longtime collaborator, Linda Wood Rollo, they actually set these fun little very short pieces called Haiku for Harp. And in them, actually, they're actual ancient Japanese haiku. And in those pieces, I actually play the harp with paintbrushes or also with a tuning key to sort of evoke a cat's meow or the motion and sound of a broom. So, yeah, so hopefully it's fun and surprising and also easy to listen to.
in not the Stereo 100
Indeed.
Way. Although it does work on Stereo 101.1 as well as 90.9, which is where, of course, you're hearing Live and Local with Ann and Jonathan. And they are going to be joined now by Masumi Rostad, the violist of the Pacifica Quartet, also, at least for a little bit yet, of the faculty at the University of Illinois before they head off to Indiana University. And this is the finale of the Sonata for Flute, Viola, and Harp by Claude Debussy. It's from the CD Song of the Black Swan. Jonathan and Ann, thanks for coming in, and thanks for sharing this music with us.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Lead into the next tune on that record. It's Song of the Black Swan, the name of the CD by the Alethea Duo, Jonathan Keeble and Ann Young. They were joined by violist Masumi Per Rostad, also of the University of Illinois faculty, for that movement, the final movement from the Sonata for those instruments by Claude Debussy. You're listening to Live and Local. We have support for our broadcast today from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Donated blood saves the lives of the injured and critically ill. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation, it's about life. More information is on the web at bloodservices.org. My next guest on Live and Local is John Stevens. He's executive director of the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, Illinois. And they have just announced their 55th anniversary summer season, the summer season being really kind of their big season of every year. And they're doing some big shows, but they're also doing a 55th anniversary concert and gala as the first event in that in this season on Saturday, June 2nd. John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you because we always get to hear some fun music, including music from a show that I hadn't encountered before myself. I'm not sure why exactly, because it seems like an awful lot of fun. And this will have tunes that certainly jazz and specifically swing fans will recognize.
Absolutely, yes. That is the name of the musical, Swing. And it was done at the Little Theater on the Square in 2005, which it was a show that a lot of our patrons didn't know either and ended up being the biggest selling show that summer. And we were doing things like Beauty and the Beast and other big name shows, and that sold better than all these big name shows that we did that summer. So it's just a lot of fun music from that swing era that people know all the tunes. So that's why I think people really liked it. And it was fantastic dancing as well. So.
Well, I was going to say, if you're going to do swing, you have to have dancing.
Absolutely. We had 8 dancers in the show that were just flipping and flopping all over the place. So it was pretty amazing.
And that show, the show itself, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, is going to be when?
That's
just on the gala.
Yeah, that's just
on the gala.
We're doing our gala is featuring songs from shows from the past 55 years of the Little Theater on the Square. So we're just focusing on some of these favorites of our patrons and bringing them back to life. So we'll do stuff from that show, from Chorus Line. We've got something from Full Monty that we're doing, from MAME. Some of these big shows that we've done in the past.
Well, here's an example. Music from the musical Swing, the original Broadway cast, was their rendition of Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, and that is one of the shows that will be represented on the 55th anniversary gala at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. And as that name implies, this is their 55th anniversary summer season, which John Stevens is here to announce for us. Why don't you run it down? What's happening this summer?
We've got a fantastic season lined up. We kick things off June 6th with Grease, and it runs the 6th through the 17th of June. And then we move into Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Then we go to The Pirates of Penzance, The Music Man, and we close on the main stage part of the season with Dolly Parton's new musical, 9 to 5. And this is the first Midwest production, or Central Illinois production, I guess, regional production of that show. So we're very excited about that. And then we have also 3 shows for our children's theater program. This year we're doing Pinkalicious, and then we do a show called How I Became a Pirate. And then we're closing with The Princess and the Frog.
This is the second production of Pinkalicious that we've had in our area.
Yes.
Parkland did it recently.
Extremely popular in Parkland, and it's selling like crazy for us.
Mostly kids that come to this show?
Mostly kids. A lot of grandparents bringing grandchildren and parents bringing grandchildren. There's like 12 or 15 books on Pinkalicious. It's become very popular over the past couple of years. It's about a little girl who doesn't eat anything except pink cupcakes, and she turns pink.
It sounds horrible.
It's silly, but her family convinces her that she needs to eat other things because she gets this disease called pinkatitis.
Of course.
And so she has to learn to eat other things to get rid of the pinkatitis.
And I assume there's a lesson in all of
Absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. But it's a very cute little show. And then How I Became a Pirate is also based off of a book of the same name about a little boy who's playing on the beach, and this group of pirates comes along and decides that they're going to take him on board their ship and teach him how to be a pirate. And along the way, he teaches them what it's like to be a little boy, too. So he teaches them to play soccer and things like that. And they teach him that pirates have to have green teeth and can't brush their teeth and things like that. So there's kind of a trade back and forth with that show as well. But the sequel to that book is called Pirates Don't Babysit.
Well, pirates always seem to be a hit with young people.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is probably ironic given what pirates really were. But pirates, the whole Pirates of the Caribbean series, and Peter Pan and so on. So I'm sure that'll be a big hit for you. Well, here's, speaking of pirates.
Okay.
Pirates of, you got two pirate shows.
We do.
In the season, Pirates of Penzance. This is one I'm trying to remember what the song is like. So let's... So this is going to jog my memory.
Okay.
This is the one that involves chorus and various solos called When the Foeman Bears His Steel.
Okay.
From the Pirates of Penzance. This is the Welsh National Operas, not the Doyle Cart Group. Sir Charles Macarius leading his forces here. Here's a little sample from Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan. From the Pirates of Penzance, Gilbert and Sullivan, When the Foeman Bears His Steel. And that is one of the shows that will be on the 55th anniversary season, summer season, at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. It's going to run from July 5th through the 15th for 13 performances. Now, it says here, John, 13 performances only. Is that a small number?
Normally, we do 15 performances of each show, but since normally that slot would open on the 4th of July, so we've cut both of our 4th of July shows because they're usually low attendance because there's so much going on that day.
Well, of course. You mean you're not going to do Pirates with fireworks or something
like that?
Well,
we actually are doing a giant pirate ship float in the Sullivan Parade, so we're excited to see how that turns out.
And Greece will kick things off in June. You mentioned Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I remember... when I was a kid, listening to the record of the movie, which was even then probably a show that I have never seen the show. Tell me a little bit about
that
one.
From what I know, I think it was a movie first, and they turned it into a stage play from the musical movie version of it. It has recently just went a complete rescoring and rewrite of the show. Paper Mill Playhouse did it a few years ago, and so we got the script about a month ago, and it's an all-new version of it, so new instrumentation. It's for a smaller ensemble of 9-piece instead of like the 22-piece orchestra that was originally with it. So it's much more doable for us and a little bit smaller cast, which is always makes me a little happier, too, with less payroll.
Little Theater's a pretty small space.
It is.
The Little Theater is not called that because it's small,
no,
but it does happen to
It does happen to be a very small space. It's a 30-foot proscenium. The stage is only 27.5 feet deep, so we have to pack a lot onto that tiny space. And there's only 4 feet of wing space on one side and 6 feet on the other, so not a huge area by any means at all.
Named after, is it Guy Little?
Guy Little Jr., yes.
And how many people in the house?
418, 100 in the balcony, 318 on the floor.
So it's a nice, it's an intimate way to see a show. It's a
Absolutely.
Great way to see a show.
Yeah, there's not a bad seat in the house. I have sat literally everywhere in the theater and never have a bad place to see a show.
Aside from the obvious hope that each show will sell well, what are some of the thoughts that go through your mind when you decide, when you look for shows for the summer season?
Well, I want to make sure that I am... making sure that my audience that always comes every year is happy with things, but I also want to try to attract a new audience as well. So we do some classic shows. We we'll usually take one classic show and kind of modernize it a little bit. We're doing that with Pirates. The score is staying the same, but the look of the show is going to be a little bit different. We're kind of basing it a la Pirates of the Caribbean. So
I was going to ask if that might be what you're doing.
Absolutely, because that's what people are familiar with right now. And then our new show this year is 9 to 5. Even though it's not a new show, is you know, our older audience will know the show since it was done in 1980 is when it was, came out on at the movies. But so they'll know the name, but it also attracts that new audience because it's a brand new score. Yes, the title song is in it, but all 21 other songs in the show were written just a couple years ago. Dolly Parton wrote all of those for the show.
9 to 5 was, she's the author of those
Absolutely.
Songs?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know she wrote the original 9 to 5 for the movie, and then they came back to her about 10 years ago, and she started writing all of these new songs for it, and it came out on Broadway, I think, 3 years ago, and was a short stint on Broadway, but did really well touring the United States. The New York audience didn't love it, but the regional audiences have really loved it when it toured through the United States.
Is that a common thing where something that isn't a hit on Broadway becomes a hit when it goes on tour?
Yeah, because a lot of the people who would see it, regionally might not get to New York. My audience, a lot of them have not seen big shows in New York or Chicago, but they love seeing things at the Little Theater. In fact, they would probably prefer seeing it at the Little Theater versus that. And that show's right up their alley with some of the country music in it that's in it. It's not by all means country music at all. She's written a beautiful score for the show and a lot of amazing music that is really challenging to actors.
Well, one of the shows you'll be doing in the summer season that seems to always be a hit is The Music Man, running July 18th to 29th. And I pulled this particular version of it because I'm frankly curious to hear what it sounds
Absolutely.
Like. It's the it's one of the signature songs from the show, 76 Trombones, featuring the hundreds of people in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Let's see what this sounds like. Well, that sounded suitably festive, and with the echo of the tabernacle, presumably that's where they recorded that. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir, joined here by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra in 76 Trombones by Meredith Wilson from The Music Man, which the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan will be doing as part of its summer season. And, of course, the 55th Anniversary Concert and Gala, which is just a one-night event, will be on Saturday, June 2nd. John Stevens is here from the Little Theater. Just real quick, John, besides some of the shows you'll be highlighting from the previous 55 seasons, what else can people expect on that event?
Well, I think it'll be a great introduction for them to our 2012 summer cast. Everybody from the summer cast will be there, will be performing. We do have a few people that are kind of local celebrities that are not part of the summer cast that will be coming and joining us and performing. Therese Kincaid, who is from Charleston, Illinois. Jack Scott from Bethany, Illinois, who's traveled around a lot. I actually am going to perform as well, which I don't do very often on that, so I'm excited to get to
so everybody can have a good laugh
as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, you did that once or twice on our show, so
it's
you're a pretty good singer.
Thank
actually
you.
John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Absolutely.
And we'll look forward to it as we get closer to some of these specific productions. It's the Little Theater in the Square. Their web address is thelittletheater.org. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector, the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.